The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
The following resolution, whereas Ernest and Dorothy Hatfield have been longtime supporters of every level of Yarmouth sport, starting with the support and encouragement of their own children, with Dorothy often being the only mother present at her son's hockey practices in the cold rink during the wee hours of the morning. And whereas Ernest and Dorothy Hatfield are now steadfast cheerleaders for the grandchildren as well as many other youth in the community, as they are known for attending practically every sporting event happening in town. And whereas the same two seats at Yarmouth Mariners Center that Ernest and Dorothy Hatfield, or Ernie and Dort, as everybody knows them, have always sat and have been inscribed with the words super fans in recognition of the Hatfields' wholehearted and passionate support of all level of sports in Yarmouth. Therefore, be resolved that the members of this House of Assembly recognize super fans Ernest and Dorothy Hatfield for their unwavering support of Yarmouth sports and thank them for their contagious enthusiasm and dedication to sports in Yarmouth. Madam Speaker, I ask for waiver of notice and pass without debate.
There's been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion is carried. Orders of the day. We'll now begin oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is 10:37. We will proceed till 11:37. I recognize the honourable member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Thank you. Two months ago, the Premier said he was forcing HRM to give Big Oil a tax break to keep the Dartmouth Imperial Refinery open. Now we know the refinery may close, may become a terminal, may even be purchased and shipped overseas, like the Ultramar refinery before it. Madam Speaker, the Premier was quite convinced that he was riding in to save the refinery as the white knight on a bright, shiny horse. But the Premier seems to have been blinded by his own propaganda. So, Madam Speaker, will the Premier explain what was the basis that he had that forcing HRM to give the refinery a tax break would keep it open and gas prices low? Both things he claimed 2 months ago would happen when he ordered the tax reduction.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I claimed neither of those things, but what I can tell the member opposite is simply this, if he thinks doubling the tax rate on the refinery would have been an incentive for them to stay, he's welcome to that strategy.
Recognize the honourable member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Well, Madam Speaker, the Premier didn't seem to have any concern about that. On May 10th, 2004, the Premier said, what about the fact that this is going to mean a new regime imposed upon the municipality? And the recorded vote that followed had almost every single sitting member of the current NDP government, who were the ones that were in opposition at the time, vote against giving Imperial a tax break. And I will table that, including the Premier. Madam Speaker, just as the Premier got few, if any, guarantees with the Bowater deal to stay open, the Premier put no conditions on the corporate giveaway he gave to Imperial Oil either. This is typical of the NDP, hand out taxpayers' money to big corporations like it's going out of style, with no commitment tied to the credit. So, Madam Speaker, before handing Imperial another tax break, paid for, incidentally, by another level of government, why didn't the Premier require a commitment for the refinery to stay open as a going concern? And why didn't he demand to be upgraded to meet the new opportunities they now can't meet?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, Madam Speaker, of course, that has no relationship or bearing to reality whatsoever, but that's not unusual for the member from Dartmouth East. But he should remember that an Imperial Oil had almost a 100-year history in the community of Dartmouth, that it has been deeply ingrained in the economic fabric of that community. And for him to attack the workers who work at that refinery, to attack an economic asset for our region, I think is shameful. And to suggest that the continuation, not a cent of taxpayers' money went to that refinery. What happened was there was a continuation of a piece of legislation that was already in place that prevented the taxation on that refinery, which is already the highest east of Manitoba, from going even higher.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Well, Madam Speaker, there are a couple of issues with what the Premier had to say. First of all, his own government's information shows it is nowhere close to the highest property taxes for refineries of its size in Canada. Second of all, if the Premier thought it was so important, Madam Speaker, if the Premier thought it was so important, he should have done, as he said in 2004, and provided the tax break out of revenues of the province and not forced another level of government to pass that on. Madam Speaker, thirdly, the Premier voted against the legislation and said it was wrong when he was in opposition. So now he's doing the complete opposite thing. Madam Speaker, the Premier had a choice. On April 13th, Larry Hughes said, and I will quote and table this, the tax concessions for the refinery that have been presented by Premier Dexter as both a way to ensure employment at the refinery and keep gas prices low, since it is produced in the province. By focusing on these two objectives, the Premier will ultimately succeed in doing neither. Madam Speaker, that was April 13th, a little over a month ago, it appears. Mr. Hughes was right. Madam Speaker, when will the Premier realize he has to stop handing out big checks to corporations without guarantees for Nova Scotians? When will he stop putting corporate shareholders first instead of Nova Scotia workers?
The Honourable Premier.
The world tonight,
Andrew. Madam Speaker, you know, that question goes from inane to bizarre, because, you know, exactly what we were doing was putting the workers at that refinery, their livelihoods and their families first, Madam Speaker. Now, furthermore, if he actually read what I said at the time, I did not say what he alleges I said. In fact, I said this was a complex issue, that there were many sides to be considered. That's what I said at the time, Madam Speaker. And I can tell you this, I don't know what construction other people put on what it is that I had to say, but I do know this. I know that, you know, driving that refinery out of this province is not in the best interest of the people of Dartmouth that he's supposed to represent, and it is not in the best interest of Nova Scotia.
Recognize the Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Today we learn that the Imperial Oil Refinery in Dartmouth is being put up for sale after more than 90 years in operation in our province. Sadly, that means that the jobs of 200 employees and another 200 contract employees are now at risk. And this announcement comes just 2 months after the Premier gave that refinery a $3.6 million tax break, but left in place the highest corporate taxes in all of Canada and the highest HST in all of Canada, which of course applies to retail gasoline. So my question to the Premier, why is Imperial Oil so anxious to leave Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Madam Speaker, I have to say I find that question to be just dripping with irony, considering that the member, the leader of the Conservative Party at the time of the initial legislation that came forward with respect to that refinery was the Chief of Staff to the Premier at that point in time. They chose that particular manner of supporting the refinery. They put that legislation in place. They went out of their way to convince the opposition that it was the best possible way to keep the refinery in Dartmouth. So I find it is extraordinarily profound and ironic that the leader of the Conservative Party should ask that particular question. Madam Speaker, we work with all of our partners in the business community to try and ensure that we have a strong economy in the province. We're going to continue to do that. I did meet with the president of Imperial Oil for the purposes of understanding their decision, but more than that, also understanding what the way forward was for that refinery and the people who work there.
On his first supplementary.
Madam Speaker, the Premier's memory is pretty sketchy of that time, but let me remind him that at that time, the HST was 13%, the corporate tax rate was in the middle of the pack for the country, not at the top of the scale, that in exchange for that break, the refinery made hundreds of millions of dollars in further investments and continued to operate for a decade afterward, not just 2 months. There's a pretty big difference between the history lesson the Premier just gave us and reality. But here's another contrast, Madam Speaker. Irving Oil has a refinery in St. John that is doing just fine. And you know why? Because the government of New Brunswick is working very hard to secure the future of that refinery by working with the owners of the Irving Refinery in St. John to bring in new sources of crude, cheaper sources of crude from Western Canada that are dozens of dollars less than the crude oil that supplies the refinery here. That is one of the reasons that we could, if we had a premier as active as the Premier of New Brunswick, have both cheaper gasoline and a long-term secure refinery in Dartmouth. So my question to the Premier, why isn't he fighting for jobs and cheaper gas here in Nova Scotia like they are in New Brunswick?
The Honourable Premier.
Madam Speaker, you want to talk about a sketchy memory. Somebody who thinks that the HST was at 13% back in those days, man, I'm telling you, that's a sketchy memory. In fact, the HST was at 15% at that time. I just point that out if we're talking about a sketchy memory. But more importantly, I have been following the debate that's going on with respect to the pipeline. What I can say is that, of course, there is in fact no proposition for any kind of a pipeline. There is no question that has been articulated with respect, for example, who would bear the costs of that kind of a project, what effect it would have on consumers. None of that has been determined. So we follow all those debates in case they might in some way affect us down the road. But if it did, it would be down the road, and it would be a long way down the road.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. All Nova Scotians know that the provincial rate of retail sales tax 10 years ago was 8%. It's now 10% under this government. Just to set the record straight, it is up 2%. Madam Speaker, the Premier of New Brunswick, past Premiers of New Brunswick, the business community of New Brunswick, none of them are waiting for someone else to tell them what to do like the Premier of Nova Scotia is. They are out actively working to secure the long-term health of that refinery in St. John and all those jobs in a way that actually deliver cheaper gasoline to the market in St. John. As a result, they're not waiting for someone else to do all their homework for them. They're out and hustling now while our Premier sits back idly by, handing out a tax break here and there, doing a bailout here and there, and hoping for the best. They have a refinery. Their refinery is going to be there in the long run. They may well have cheaper gas because they're actively working to make that happen while our Premier sits back and does nothing. So my question to the Premier, why is our Premier getting out-hustled by the Premier of New Brunswick when it comes to refineries and cheaper gas for Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Premier.
Madam Speaker, well, quite the opposite. We've been working with the refinery to ensure that they're in the best possible position. The position that's taken by Imperial Oil does not have to do with taxation. It has to do with the fact that it no longer fits into its global distribution chain. This is something that has been on the horizon, unfortunately, for some period of time. So that's the answer to the question. But I just go back, to what the leader of the Conservative Party said. And I think even he would have to admit that the HST rate at that time was 15%.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, Nova Scotians have had enough when it comes to the increase in their power bills, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I want to read from a document that I have with me today, which really sums up the feelings of I think all Nova Scotians. In the document, I quote, it says, "We are adamantly against any increase in the existing residential rate structure for Nova Scotia Power Incorporated, and that we feel the huge net profits collected by NSP under existing rates and with the protection of the fuel adjustment mechanism that NSP currently enjoys, any increase in the current residential rate is pure greed on the part of NSPI and its shareholders," end of quote. Madam Speaker, I'll table that document, Madam Speaker, but I want to ask the Premier, would the Premier share those views of Nova Scotians when it comes to the increase in power rates and show up at the URB and oppose any rate increase in Nova Scotia power?
Neil, order, please. I would like to, I need to confer with the clerk for a moment, please. Order. I recognize the Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, what I would say and what I would agree with is that I think any increase that affects the people and their pocketbooks is not something we would like to see. But there is a process before the Utility and Review Board. They will review it. Nova Scotia government will be there at the Utility and Review Board hearing to examine the filings to ensure that any request treats everyone fairly. That is the process that was put in place by the Liberal Party when they were in government. Well, it's been a long time ago, thankfully.
Opposition on his first supplementary.
Madam Speaker, the Premier didn't mind adding increasing 1,400 user fees for all Nova Scotians, Madam Speaker. He didn't mind increasing the HST by 2%, Madam Speaker. Mr. Speaker, now he thinks it's okay for Nova Scotia Power to continue to raise their rates, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, Nova Scotians are finding the pressures of this government, the cost of living that has increased under this government, too much to bear, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, what they're asking for from this Premier and this government is to stand up for Nova Scotia ratepayers against Nova Scotia shareholders. Madam Speaker, tens of thousands of Nova Scotians are responding in a positive way to support this government, to go down to the URB and say, enough is enough. Nova Scotia Power has taken enough money out of the pockets of Nova Scotians, and it must stop now, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, my question for the Premier, will he stand up with those Nova Scotians and oppose any rate increase?
The Honourable Premier.
Madam Speaker, we stand up every day for the people of Nova Scotia. That's why we took the HST off of home electricity. It is why more than $100 million was returned to consumers through conservation efforts. It is why the HART program was put in place to assist people in our province. And there is now, Madam Speaker, a myriad of programs that we have put in place, including increases in rates for the poorest of our citizens. This is what the record of this government is, unlike the record of the opposition parties who voted against those measures.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Madam Speaker, we've had 7 rate increases over the last 11 years. 36% increase under the previous Conservative government, and now we have almost a 20% increase under this NDP government, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, on top of that, the HST has been increased under this government, Madam Speaker. 1,400 user fees have been increased. But what's even worse, Madam Speaker, is that this Premier went and added a tax to every bill, electricity bill, in the province of Nova Scotia. Madam Speaker, to quote the present finance minister, fee is just another name for a tax, Madam Speaker. And it is the NDP electricity tax. So my final question for the Premier, will the Premier do the right thing and stop charging Nova Scotia ratepayers and ask Nova Scotia Power shareholders to pay that fee?
The Honourable Premier.
Madam Speaker, we took the HST off of electricity. There is not 1 cent of provincial tax on electricity bills for Nova Scotians as a result of the efforts of this government, Mr. Speaker. Something that the Leader of the Opposition voted against, something that the Leader of the Opposition campaigned against. And now he complains about things like the HST, and yet he votes against the very bill that will put it into law, and he refuses to say what he would do.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his next question.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Yesterday afternoon, Madam Speaker, the NDP government released an executive summary of a study that was designed to tell Nova Scotians that gas regulation was working. This was a $40,000 report which, Madam Speaker, went untendered, Madam Speaker, but instead was handed out to a failed NDP candidate from St. John, New Brunswick, Madam Speaker, with a long-time public defender of gas regulation. So my question to the Premier, could the Premier explain to this House and tell all Nova Scotians why a $40,000 untendered contract went to a failed NDP candidate to produce an intentionally biased report on gas regulation?
The Honourable Premier.
Madam Speaker, if there's any indication of bias in this House, it is, of course, on behalf of those who would like to try and tell Nova Scotians that gas regulation is bringing them higher prices. The study that was done by a respected economist from the University of New Brunswick, who's a PhD in, of course, in economics, who has examined the market in Nova Scotia in past, Madam Speaker, and I want to table the previous opinion of the Leader of the Opposition when he says that it is deregulation, that it is scrapping regulation that will benefit Nova Scotians. And of course, Madam Speaker, a study that shows that $8 million were returned to gasoline consumers and that we have the lowest diesel prices in the country is an inconvenient fact for the Leader of the Opposition.
Recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Madam Speaker, the Premier's idea, this report the Premier has, Madam Speaker, was conceived in late February and written, Madam Speaker, within a period of 30 days. And the NDP gave $40,000, Madam Speaker, to a known public supporter of gas regulation who just happened to be a failed NDP candidate. Matter of fact, Madam Speaker, I think the best job in town is being a failed NDP candidate, Madam Speaker. In fact, Madam Speaker, Dr. Hill previously published a paper defending gas. I think some of them want to jump ship now that see the amount of money that's being handed out to failed candidates, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, in fact, Dr. Hill had previously published a paper defending gas regulation in Nova Scotia, Madam Speaker, reaching very similar conclusions, Madam Speaker, but in 2009 it was for the Canadian Centre of Policy Alternatives, Madam Speaker. So my question to the Premier, wouldn't this $40,000 have been better spent in the classroom for students or on mental health initiatives instead of asking this professor to redo a report he did just a few years ago?
The Honourable Premier.
Madam Speaker, Professor Hill looked at great detail and did a great deal of analysis into the gasoline market in Nova Scotia, not just gasoline, but petroleum products, including diesel. And one of the conclusions he came to with respect to, for example, the diesel market, was that we had the lowest diesel prices in the country. And he said in his report about the effectiveness of regulation, you just can't do better than that.
The Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
I think you can, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the Premier could scrap gas regulation and put $10 million back in the pockets of Nova Scotia. Madam Speaker, the Premier went on to spend this $40,000 to this failed NDP candidate, Madam Speaker, for essentially the same report that Dr. Hill authored in 2009. Madam Speaker, it wouldn't surprise many members of this House if Dr. Hill just cut and paste from his report in 2009 to present day. Madam Speaker, it's a rather interesting idea that we need to spend $40,000 to a failed NDP candidate in New Brunswick, Madam Speaker. Was there no Nova Scotian? Was there no Nova Scotian that they could have hired to provide a view, Madam Speaker? Or is the fact of the matter, Madam Speaker, there's no Nova Scotian that would give the Premier the answer he was looking for, Madam Speaker? That might be the case, Madam Speaker. Is it not good enough to, have to go out and ask a Nova Scotian who has to live, under this failed public policy that the Premier continues to hang on to, Madam Speaker? So, Madam Speaker, could the Premier tell this host why he sent out an untendered contract to a New Brunswicker and ignored all Nova Scotians who could have delivered him the right answer?
The Honourable Premier.
Madam Speaker, I'd point out to the Leader of the Opposition that there is gas regulation in Prince Edward Island under a Liberal government. There is gas regulation in New Brunswick under a Conservative government, Madam Speaker. And the Liberals have no problem when we appoint prominent Liberals to take on projects on behalf of the government. They have no problem with that, Mr. Speaker. They only have a problem when a respected economist from the University of New Brunswick happened to participate in the democratic process. That's the only time they have a problem, Mr. Speaker. That's the only time. The simple fact of the matter
order.
That is un...
Order. Order, please. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
The simple fact of the matter is, Madam Speaker, is simply this, that gas regulation put $8 million back into the pockets of ordinary Nova Scotians, and the Leader of the Opposition would like to have big oil companies setting the prices and looking after consumers in our province.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, yesterday in this House, the Premier failed to answer a simple question about when he first became aware that our power rates were going to go up by 6% over the next 2 years. Now that he's had some time to think about it, I will ask the Premier again, when did he and his government or anyone on his staff first become aware, what date, when, that the power company wanted to raise our power rates by 6%?
The Honourable Premier.
Madam Speaker, we, of course, became aware that power rates our filing was going ahead when the filing took place. My understanding is that Nova Scotia Power contacts all the parties in the legislature, gives them an update on what their plans are with respect to rate filings. My understanding is they would have done that with the Conservative Party and with the Liberal Party. They do the same with us.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Madam Speaker, the fact of the matter is that Nova Scotia Power is now planning multiple years of power increases, not wanting to come back and ask again until after the next election, an awfully convenient way of going about business for the first time ever. Just want to be clear, just want to confirm that no one in the government and the Premier's office and the Department of Energy, staff or otherwise, had any discussions with Nova Scotia Power prior to their filing about their interest in having a multi-year increase in our power rates.
The Honourable Premier.
Madam Speaker, the answer to his question is no. He's quite right. The filings of the Nova Scotia Power, of course, belong to them. But I can say this: one of the reasons why Nova Scotians find themselves in this position today is because of the history of privatization that took place in the province. I pointed out yesterday that in the days gone by, the way that the Conservative Party acted was they appointed a former president of the Conservative Party as the president of Nova Scotia Power. And then they privatized the utility, and when the president then of Nova Scotia Power, previously the president of the Conservative Party, was asked whether or not they did a study or whether or not they had any reason to believe that lower prices would be delivered to the people of Nova Scotia, he said, "I didn't do a study, I'm not going to do a study, and this is based on a philosophical feeling that we have."
Party on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. As much as we all are entertained by the history lesson, let me just point out that he is the Premier now. He is the one that can stand up for Nova Scotians. He is the one that can say no to power rate increases if he wants to, and yet that is not what the Premier is doing.
No,
since the Premier has been kind enough today to do what he did not do yesterday and confirm that they weren't working with the power company on this rate increase, I will ask the Premier to do one thing for us before the House rises. We have asked, by way of FOIA pop, over and over again for the Premier's office to provide details of any correspondence, emails or otherwise, between his office and the power company in the lead-up to this rate increase. Will he commit right now to providing that information for all Nova Scotians to see?
The Honourable Premier.
Madam Speaker, if he's filed that FOIA pop request, my understanding he has received everything that he has requested under the Freedom of Information request. I know it's disturbing to him that there's nothing to support the theory that he has about this, but Madam Speaker, the simple fact of the matter is, you know, as it is with the economy, as it is with the deficit of the province, the simple fact of the matter is that even with respect to electricity, we are left to clean up the mess made by those two parties.
Recognize the Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
I made it back. Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Minister for Economic and Rural Development and Tourism has been asked on multiple occasions why he does not take skyrocketing power rates in this province seriously for our businesses and for our economy. This is one of the top concerns for every single business in the province, and certainly when I talk and when I listen to businesses, they tell me that they're being squeezed by high power rates and it's affecting their bottom line, their profit, and their ability to keep people employed. But each time I ask the minister, he doesn't answer the question. So, Madam Speaker, I'll put it simply and straightforward for the minister. Why is the minister failing to take action on one of the largest concerns for business in Nova Scotia, and that is high power rates?
The Honourable Minister of Economic, Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And Madam Speaker, I'm going to punt that question over to the Minister of Energy.
I recognize the Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I certainly know that we're all concerned about power rates here in our province, from our most vulnerable citizens right up to small business to large industry, and trying to find the happy medium that allows a rate that's workable for large industry is what the UARB is tasked to do, and they're looking through the consumer advocate, through the small business advocate, and through interveners such as political parties to find what's fair and just for all Nova Scotians, including a large industry.
Recognize the Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And again, this is about economic development and tourism and the growth of our economy in this province. So while I understand that power rates are a factor of the Minister of Energy's portfolio, this affects businesses, it affects entrepreneurs, and it affects our growth. So I would suspect that the Minister would know a little bit about an input cost that's so important to small businesses in this province. Nova Scotians are paying amongst the highest power rates in the entire country, and they're obviously continuing to rise. This is very bad for our economy, Madam Speaker. However, every time the Minister is asked, he shrugs it off and dismisses it, and I truly think that he doesn't understand the impact this is having on our economy, Madam Speaker. So my question, why can't the Minister understand and explain that skyrocketing power rates are hurting the economy, and why won't he stand up and do something? Take action against Nova Scotia Power.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Madam Speaker. You know, Madam Speaker, in the 3 years that I've been Minister, I've been more than happy to stand up and respond to questions that are relevant to me. And I will say to the member opposite, you know, he says he's been trying to get some things through to me. Madam Speaker, I've been trying all session to get some things through to him. And, you know, I've made the offer to the member opposite to come and learn Come and learn about economic and rural development and tourism. Come and learn about the jobs here strategy. Come and learn, and I reiterate, Madam Speaker, that the one of the most important things that companies look at when they want to invest in Nova Scotia is our most important asset is our human resource asset. You know, there are many factors that determine whether or not a company will do business in Nova Scotia, and yes, electricity is one of them. Most importantly are the people.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And the Minister, as usual, doesn't answer the question about power rates, but he talks about education. And it's very difficult to talk to this Minister about education when it's his government that has cut the guts out of public education
order,
in this
please.
Province.
Order. But ask the member to retract the word guts. It's unparliamentary, and rephrase his question.
My apologies, Madam Speaker. What I meant to say is cut the heart and soul of the public education system
order,
in this province.
Please. Order. Again, I would ask the member to retract the word, as we know that's retracted, and then rephrase your question.
I will retract that statement, and what I meant to say was cut the heart and soul at a public education system. Madam Speaker, the minister does offer. So I will respond, and I'm glad he gave me the opportunity to respond. I'll meet with that minister anytime. We can do it in the red room now if you would like. But it's just, Minister, I just want to make it clear that it's just him and me, not the department, not the deputy minister. I don't want to watch PowerPoint slides. I want to hear what that minister knows, because he's failing. It's 0.3% growth. He's failing this province in economic development, and I want to hear what he has to say about it.
I didn't hear. I'm not sure that there was actually a question in there. There is a. You've made a statement, but perhaps you could ask a question, a short one. You've had enough. A quick question.
My question is to the minister. Well, if he wants to meet, will he meet with me one-on-one to discuss these issues without statistics and PowerPoint presentations?
Thank you. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the last time I heard a challenge like that, I think I was in grade 9. Also, I want to.
Order, please. Recognize the Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
I want to say, Madam Speaker, it was this government that put the heart and soul back in education. It was this government that put the heart and soul back into economic and rural development and tourism for the province of Nova Scotia.
Recognize the Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Justice. It's now been a month since the tragic death of Raymond Tavel. Sent shockwaves through the province. As people mourn for a remarkable man, Nova Scotians wondered just how it was that our system let him down. The NDP were very quick to deflect the difficult questions. They came out the very next day, and the Minister of Justice said, and I quote, "We announced today that we'll be doing a review and having a review. I'm in partnership with the Minister of Health and Wellness, and we're going to have a statement back by 30 days from now to talk about whether the policies and procedures followed at that point to determine if they were adequate and in what direction we need to go." And I'll table that, of course. So on what date did the Minister suspect that such a review might not happen as promised?
I recognize the Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I want to first start off by giving my condolences to the family and friends of Raymond Tavel. And today is a very special day, looking at the ceremony that's going to be carried on this evening. In regards to the question that that the Honourable Member presents, I very clearly recall the fact that we took a position that we would gather information and we would look at the best course of action in which to take to address this very complex issue that has many different levels of concern within society, and that we have to progress in a very positive, structural manner in order to get to deal with the complexities. So the bottom line of where we're at here today is that the Minister of Health has made an announcement today, has very clearly articulated the direction in which we're going to go in, and I fully support the position that she took this morning.
Recognize the Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker, and I will go to the Minister of Health for the next set of questions. On the 30-day review promise, conveniently allowed both Ministers of Justice and Health to deflect the questions for the balance of the session, until the last day when, of course, Imperial Oil drops a bombshell. All that long, the Minister has left the impression that we would have a review. But it turns out today that only are the NDP, in fact, get this promising a review. I think we've heard promising reviews before. So my question again is, on what date did the Minister of Health first suspect that the review promise for 30 days hence could not be done by the province, and that no review would be ready at all within 30 days? And why did she not do something to tell us about it?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, at no time did we indicate that a 30-day review would be complete within 30 days. What we said was that there would be a review and we would report within 30 days on the progress made toward doing that review. And that's precisely what we've done, Madam Speaker. The Capital District Health Authority and the Departments of Health and Justice have each secured two experts from outside of the province of Nova Scotia. The terms of reference have been established. All of the information about the expertise, the background of the people who will be conducting the review is online for people to see. And we will have the results of that review, which will be available to the public later this summer, Madam Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much. And I think we in the opposition, I think Nova Scotians took it for granted that 30 days meant 30 days we would find out what things transpired towards that resulted in the death of a much-loved activist in Nova Scotia. We find today that apparently it was more of an empty promise that we would have any answers within 30 days. A promise not kept, and then a new promise that repeats the old promise. Madam Speaker, that sounds like the HST all over again. But Mr. Speaker, people are getting tired of getting meaningless promises from that side of the House. So my question, why can't the NDP ever learn that before you make a promise, you have to make sure that you can actually deliver, or people will see you as lacking in basic credibility to govern?
Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, after being Minister of Health and Wellness for 3 years, following on the occupant of that office being that member, I don't think that member wants to stand up here and talk about comparing accomplishments, because I can tell you, Madam Speaker, when that member occupied the Minister of Health's office, nothing was done on emergency rooms, nothing was done on mental health, nothing was done to improve drug coverage for seniors, nothing was done on ambulance fees, Madam Speaker. I don't need to take any lessons from that member on keeping commitments in the Department of Health.
I recognize the Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, at a breakfast this morning at the Chamber of Commerce in Berwick, the Mayor of Kentville asked the Minister for Economic and Rural Development why this government is taking jobs from one rural area and moving them to another. The Minister proudly stated that more information would be coming from the Premier. So my question is to the Premier. to what was the Minister of Economic and Rural Development referring this morning, and is there anything new to report to employees who are in the dark about their relocation?
Recognize the Deputy Premier.
Madam Speaker, we've worked, as we said, when we initiated the rollouts of jobs throughout the province, that we would be looking throughout all of government to make sure that we can utilize jobs right across this province, Madam Speaker, and that's what we're intending to do, and that's what we'll continue to do. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Madam Speaker, on April 30th, the government announced it would relocate the maintenance enforcement program to New Waterford. For many, this move means finding a new job for a spouse, transferring kids to a new school, starting a new life. For some, it means moving from one rural community to another. But maintenance enforcement employees recently received a letter telling them they would have to decide by June 30th if they were going to relocate or take a chance they would be transferred into another local position. Problem is, they don't know when they have to go. They have no moving date. Madam Speaker, given that employees have been given a deadline to decide whether they're going to move, will the Minister of Justice please tell members of this House when exactly the program will be relocated and employees expected to move?
I recognize the Honourable Minister of Justice.
I'll pass that question back on to the Honourable Deputy Premier.
I recognize the Honourable Deputy Premier.
Madam Speaker, stated a question that there is a deadline of June 20th for the people that are incumbents to those jobs to say what their wishes are, and then, as in most locations or in all these instances, Madam Speaker, that then there will be a rollout, and first and foremost, those affected employees will be involved all the way through the process, Madam Speaker. That's the way it works, that's the way the collective agreement works, and that's the way we will operate, Madam Speaker.
Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Employees in maintenance enforcement are already overworked. The office in Kentville alone sees 3,000 cases, and that's for 5 enforcement officers and 2 assistants. Across Nova Scotia, maintenance enforcement officers are responsible for collecting the nearly $81 million in arrears payments that are owed to families. This program is already seriously under-resourced, and now we learn that on top of managing these caseloads, maintenance enforcement officers are being asked to make major life decisions with no information. Madam Speaker, if the Minister of Justice, if the Deputy Premier cannot tell members of this House the exact date of the program move, how can they expect employees to make a decision about whether they're willing to relocate?
Recognize the Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, first let me tell you that this is what has been done in 7 other provinces. This is what's been done in 7 other provinces in the country, Madam Speaker. And we said that we were going to centralize that program, and we will. Unlike past governments, respect employees' wishes, Madam Speaker. We will not fire employees. We will not throw them aside, as we see in the previous Liberal governments, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, what we'll do is we'll work with our employees to make sure that they have the best options in front of them. Thank you.
Recognize the Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, last week the Minister of Community Services told this House that she had offered to meet with the Board of Talbot House, and at that meeting, a decision would be made regarding the future of Talbot House. So my question through you to the Minister of Community Services, can the Minister tell the House the date on which that meeting will be held?
Recognize the Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Madam Speaker, I want to also clarify, I said that we would meet with the Talbot House Board of Directors. We have been working on that. As the member opposite realizes that when you're in the House, it's very difficult to find time to go to Cape Breton. The commitment has been made. And also, at that time, we said that we would sit down and talk to the board about the review and what took place, if they had any questions with regards to that review process. Once again, they try to just twist the facts to their benefits continually. We have given them all the information that they need to know. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes on his first supplementary.
Madam Speaker, it's our understanding that the board is feeling frustrated with this minister's department.
That's right.
They're finding it difficult to pin the minister down. As a matter of fact, there was a couple of dates sent by the minister to the board of Talbot House that she eventually said she could not meet. Why did she send them in the first place? It's also our understanding that as late as last Tuesday evening, the Cape Breton Regional Municipal Council unanimously agreed to send the minister a letter asking that she immediately meet with the Board of Talbot House. Madam Speaker, people in this province have gone over 2 months without the vital services that are provided at Talbot House. Enough is enough. So my question to you, to the minister, will the minister commit to meeting with the Board of Directors of Talbot House next week?
Recognize the Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Madam Minister, Madam Speaker, if the member wants to talk to his political ally on the Board of Directors to get more clarified information, the fact was that the meeting time that they were looking at was a Friday morning at 7:30, and because of the flights to Cape Breton and the host sitting the night before, we wrote back and said we would not be able to do that. So I think that's very reasonable, and once again, I want to clarify to all Nova Scotians, the Department of Community Services did not shut Talbot House. It was a decision of the Board of Directors of Talbot House. You can reference back to February 16th, a press release that they sent out to all Nova Scotians, and it says that exactly in that press release. It was their decision to close the house. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. You know, the Minister's Department has produced a perfect storm at Talbot House. It's produced a report that the board deemed inaccurate and biased. It publicly smeared the well-respected executive director, and it pulled funding. It's time for the minister to right her wrongs. So my question to you, to the minister, does the minister yet understand the detrimental effects her decisions have had? And will she finally, at the end of this session, admit her mistakes and commit to meeting with the board with the goal of reopening Talbot House next week?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I think that one of the things that I'm wondering in all of this is whether or not the email that was inadvertently sent to my staff from a board member who was identifying that this was they needed to take a different strategy because that the media wasn't covering the issue the way they felt, or the community was not putting their pressure on it. So let's ask the party on the other side about the political motivation that's going on here. You listen to them scream, they don't like the answer because they cannot handle the truth.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Madam Speaker, roads continue to be a major concern for the residents of Richmond County. Allow me to start on a positive note, Madam Speaker, by saying we're very pleased that the Minister and his staff have approved tenders to have the repaving of the road from Dundee to St. George's Channel, where the beautiful Dundee Resort and Golf Club is located. The road in Whiteside, along with the continued multi-year plan to pave route number 4 to Sydney between the community of Johnstown to Chapel Island. But, Madam Speaker, there are many more communities in Richmond County that are asking when their roads will be addressed. Madam Speaker, in the community of Lewisdale that recently, the last number of years, have installed new sidewalks, the main road is now in deplorable shape and obviously needs to be repaved along with some of the side roads, Silver Oak Drive and Duncan Road, and Harbourview Crescent, which the Minister will recall I tabled a petition in this House earlier this session on behalf of those residents. So on behalf of the residents in those communities, I would ask if the Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal could advise as to when they can expect to see upgrading to their roads.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
I thank the young member from Richmond for a question. It's good to see that we're going to be talking on an important topic that I know you conscientiously have brought to my attention. I want to thank that member and the members opposite. The particular concern, of course, is always brought to my attention when the local area supervisors and managers have the same priorities as the members on either side of the House. That shows that everyone is doing their homework. I'm aware of some of those roads. I give you the commitment, as I've done in the past, when I have the next opportunity to get my invitation to New Waterford, I'll make it a particular time. I'll make a particular time that you can take me on one of your infamous tours of the area. But again, I want to congratulate the member opposite and other members, too. I know this agenda is crowded when we come into the legislature. I know that on many occasions there are other topics that take precedence, but I also am very well aware of that in rural Nova Scotia, roads are a top priority.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And the Minister will recall I also raised in this House the road in Cape Ogot, where the Clearwater live lobster holding facility, in fact the largest live lobster holding facility in the world, is located. This road has become deteriorated as well and has become a safety hazard for both the employees of that facility and local residents. As well, the main road in Petite de Gras, what's commonly known as the stretch to Boudreauville, has become in terrible shape as well. This is the road that accesses the local community cultural center, La Picasse, the local ball field, the credit union, and the Catholic Church. I would again ask the Minister if he could advise as to when the residents in Cape Ogot and along Petite de Gras can expect to see action on their roads.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And that sort of local input is important to this minister because I have been very candid with the member opposite. I've never heard of the stretch to Boudreauville, but I will assure you that when the time comes, we will have the opportunity to see that particular stretch of that road. Again, I want to bring it forth because I know there's members opposite who have a working relationship with me, myself as a minister. It's important that I continue to hear from you with local priorities, but I urge you in turn to make sure that your priorities are on the same page as local staff.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The lower road in River Bourgeois, along with Southside River Bourgeois as well, is in need of repair, along with Grand Gully Road, which the Minister knows I've brought to his attention due to repeated flooding, which has taken place along that gravel road, as well as the residents in Loch Lomond, which is gravel roads, but are certainly looking for upgrades to their roads. And the Minister will recall last year when he visited Little Harbour Road in Lardwes, where the main wharf is located, which is the economic engine of that community, which is a gravel road in desperate need of upgrades in light of the heavy traffic that continues to travel on that road. And that road needs to be seen as something to generate economic development, not simply because of what the counters would say for traffic on that road. So in light of all that, Madam Speaker, I realize it's difficult for the Minister to appreciate the condition of these roads from his office here in Halifax or in the legislature. So will the minister make a commitment today to the residents of Richmond County that this summer he will join me for an extensive tour of roads throughout Richmond County to better appreciate the needs facing the residents of Richmond County for good quality roads?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, member, for the question. And it must be my day with back-to-back questions on the important topic of roads. Isn't it ironic that we have to deal with it at this juncture of the sitting? However, I want to bring to the attention of all members opposite, and I notice the member from Annapolis is sitting there, and I know I can read his lips as he says to me, "What about the middle road?" And then I can look and make eye contact with the member from Colchester North, who, of course, knows how to do her homework for sure as a mature teacher. The commitment that I will give to the members of this House on all sides is that I will continue to listen to members as they bring forth their priorities, and I will assure you that I'll make sure the shocks in my Jeep are in good order before I tour the roads of Richmond County with the member opposite.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Madam Speaker, Holly Sloan White has seen her share of challenges in her 31 years. She's a bright, intelligent young lady with everything to live for, but she found herself caught up in an abusive relationship. Her mental health deteriorated, and rapidly so when her former partner committed suicide. So she visited her family doctor for help, and there she was given a phone number for mental health services in Dartmouth. She called, and she got an answering machine. They returned her call 2 days later and told her, try again next week. So she did, and she got the same answer, call again next week. So she returned to the family physician, who gave her another number. The problem was, it was actually the same phone number she had been calling in the first place. So Holly waited for months for an appointment with Dartmouth Mental Health. My question to the Minister of Health, where in the new mental health strategy would Holly see any difference in the way her pleas for help would be answered?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, yesterday the mental health strategy was announced, and one of the features of that strategy is improvements in meeting the standards for addressing wait times for mental health. Those standards essentially require that people in a crisis be seen within 24 hours, people with urgent needs be seen within 5 to 7 days, and people whose needs are not urgent will be seen in an additional period of time, within 30 days, I believe, for a first contact in terms of assessment. We will be investing resources through the mental health strategy to meet these wait time standards. We will be posting the wait times on the website, and we will be offering an annual report on the implementation of the mental health strategy, including the progress with meeting wait times, Madam Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. No doubt this situation sounds familiar to the Minister because the Minister received the same email as the Liberal caucus did. There is a glimmer of hope in this case because Holly finally has an appointment. Oddly enough, it happened the day after the Minister received the email. Now, Holly's family was skeptical of the mental health system before all this. They now believe the system is absolutely broken if an email to the minister's office prompted an appointment while months of crying out for help cannot. They are also skeptical whether the appointment will actually lead to help for Holly. Madam Speaker, we heard yesterday the minister talk about the $5.2 million for mental health, which I would be remiss if I did not add pales in comparison to the $300 million given to the Irvings and the $50 million given to a pulp and paper plant that continues to close every time we turn around. The fact of the matter is, Madam Speaker, when you
order.
Look at...
Time allotted for oral questions has elapsed. Now commence with orders of the day. I recognize the Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. During questioning, the Minister of Community Services quoted an email. And I know that we've been very apt to provide those emails as they're quoting from them. So just wondering if she could table that before the end of the session.
She didn't. My understanding, or certainly my perspective, is that she did not quote it. She referenced an email and she paraphrased her thoughts on the email. So I will rule that one out of order. I would now recognize the Honourable Government House Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, could you please call public bills for third reading?
Public bills for third reading.
Could you please call bill number 81, the Gaming Control Act?
I now call bill number